GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Hello and welcome back to the Hurling Show. It's a week where again the Munster Hurling Championship put the World Cup in the shade after a thrilling final between Cork and Clare. The Leinster final, not quite so good, bit of a dour affair, 18 points apiece. So we're here every Friday, YouTube, Periscope, whatever way you want to follow us, we're here. This week we've got plenty of stuff coming up. We've got videos with Tommy Walsh, Brendan Maher, we've got Rory O'Connor. And in studio as well, we've got Dublin captain Chris Crummie. Chris, how are you doing?
How are you, Shane? How are you getting on?
Not too bad, not too bad. Have you recovered after that season? It was real rapid-fire stuff in Leinster.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Like, the new format was excellent. Those games week on week were brilliant. And I suppose we were lucky that we had the break in the middle as well. I just loved the new season now. I thought it was brilliant. Great format.
And just to say that the show, the Hurling Show, is brought to you in association with Boyle Sports, and head to offtheball.com/Boyle Sports for some of the offers there. Chris, you're back into club mode now at the moment. You're also heading away doing a bit of charity work. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm going to off to Zambia now in 3 weeks with Owen O'Donnell off the Dublin team as well. A man that we know through one of our hurling managers from a few years ago, he set up a charity, Zamda Ireland. And he's been living over there for the last 4 years, like a retired principal. And we're going over to him to help him build a secondary school over there now in 3 weeks. So really looking forward to that.
Okay, and like, is that something that you had interest in doing before, or did it just kind of land at your feet?
It's something, I suppose, that I had interest in. We've been thinking of doing for the last 2 or 3 years. And I suppose with the break, and probably one of the advantages of having a lot of time off in the summer is that we get the opportunity to do this. So hopefully in the next few years, we won't have that time off. Yeah. And we'll be hurling in the summer.
We're going to get into the Munster versus Leinster hurling debate, which is better, and I did a poll on it as well, so the results on that were interesting. But just talk to me about this season for you, because, I mean, the expectations from the outside anyway were low for Dublin this season, but a late decision that, you know, Paddy Smith should have been, there should have been a foul on Colin Fennelly, and you lost that game against Kilkenny when you were in a winning position, brilliant performance. You lost late against Wexford, gave a great performance against Galway as well. Like, sum up the season, what are your feelings after it?
One of the lads was actually just saying, like, there was a hooter in hurling, and 70 minutes we were a point up in all those three games, but ultimately we lost those games, like, which was very disappointing, and something like we shouldn't have done it. Okay, if it happens once, but it happened three times, and it's definitely something we're going to have to really learn from, closing out games. I suppose experience, like, of being in that position would help. But a lot of people wouldn't have given us much of a chance, and I think we were like that first day against Kenny, we were 6 or 7 to 1 outsiders to win that game. But like in terms of our performance, we were reasonably happy with the performance, but at the end of the day, it's the result, and we didn't get the results, so it was disappointing.
And interestingly, when Pat Gilroy came in, he had no real hurling background. What was it like with Pat, and was there any kind of part of you that was thinking, what's he going to know about hurling?
I suppose, like, there is a part of you that thinks that, but like at the end of the day, he's won in All Ireland, and he has that experience. Like, and straight away, like, you could see just his personality and his experience of managing people in business and in football as well, or in sport. So he has that experience, and straight away, like, he, I think, definitely instilled a belief in us and a belief in the management team that we could go far.
And it must have been great as well that he said to you, "Look, I want you as my captain."
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, but definitely a massive honour for me and my club and my family as well. So it was something that, it was a great honour. I was really happy to get asked.
Who was the toughest team you faced in the championship this year?
I'd say the toughest team we played, I'd say we won Wexford, because we didn't perform at all that day, and that was probably the team that we struggled with most. We lost that game by a point, but we weren't really. It was only in the last like 10 minutes that we got that game back. They were in control of that game for nearly the whole game. So I'd say they're probably the toughest team we played. But then Kilkenny and Galway, I suppose it's a bit of a contrast to playing Wexford and the style of hurling. So, they're obviously very, very tough as well.
And how tough was the 4 games? Now, like, similar to Clare, you had the 2 weeks of games, then you had a break in 2 weeks again, so that seems like that would have been the best case scenario.
Yeah, it definitely was the best case scenario. Like, the games were brilliant, because I think the best thing about the games was actually the training. Like, the training on Tuesday and Thursday was only light recovery, and you actually enjoyed going to the training, because you knew it was just going to be maybe a bit of a puck around and a bit of a chat and just really getting recovery for the next weekend. And we were very lucky that we had that break in the middle. So like the games were very tough, and to be honest, if we had the 4 games or even 3 weeks in a row, like that would be extremely tough. But I think the new format's brilliant, and I think just with a bit of tweaking, if they can maybe give you an extra break, or everyone gets the same break period, by extending it a week, I think that would be brilliant for everyone.
One of the warriors of the game, Ryan O'Dwyer, announced his retirement during the week as well. Is there any highlight you'd have of him?
I suppose just like Ryan, like he's a brilliant player and he's a brilliant man to have on your team when you're going out to battle. But I suppose just his personality is going to be really missed around the dressing room. Like, he has a great personality and he's a great character, and he's a real leader in our dressing room. So he's definitely going to be missed for next year, and probably still come up against him a few times with Crokes yet. So we're not going to see the end of him. Like,
no doubt, and that lovely sidestep he has as well. Yeah, do you think there'll be, like, in general, you have a very young squad, but do you see any retirements? Anyone else?
I suppose like. Maybe I don't see any more retirements. Like, Conal Keeney's probably the oldest on our team, but the way he played this year, like, he was definitely one of our best players, and Alan Lone as well. Like, they're probably the two maybe senior lads on our team, but they're definitely two of our best players. So I think they'd be mad to retire, and hopefully I'll be having a word in the ear that they don't retire and give it another year or two.
And just moving on to the Leinster final, they finished Galway 18 points, Kilkenny 18 points. Tommy Walsh spoke with Moran O'Trasa and Kialig after the game last week, and here's what he had to say.
Will we see more of the same next weekend, or do you think change of venue, change of style of play?
No, I'd say it'll be similar enough. The only thing that I'd say will come is, I'd say Galway will come, and there will be more, I'd say, up to the aggression levels, up to the, I suppose, in your face type of hurling that the last year, where they would absolutely go to the ends of the earth to win a ball. I thought, you know, if you go through their forward line, the likes of, you have Conor Whelan, who was, you know, really at the flow of the game in the first half, probably kind of tailed off a little bit. Conor Cooney was that bit quiet, and Joseph Cooney and Joe Canning, and, you know, even the likes of Mannion and these boys, they were, and Niall Burke, they were coming in with points, but it was kind of just coming in and out with points here and there. And I think it was their pure ability to score, and their wonderful hurling ability is what dragged them through that game today, because I think Kilkenny were definitely up to the speed and the intensity of the game much faster.
What was your read on that Leinster final? Because everyone went into it assuming that Galway were going to win, especially after how they dismissed Kilkenny in Salt Hill earlier in the year.
Yeah, like, to be honest, I think you have to give massive credit to Kilkenny and the way they played. I just thought that both defences, but particularly Kilkenny's defence, were brilliant, and like, they snuffed out the main threats from Galway had. I thought Pádraig Walsh and Kilkenny Buckley, like, went to 50-50 balls that went in. There was only going to be one winner last Sunday, and they really set the tone, and I think the rest of the younger lads followed suit. And you can never write Kilkenny off. You saw what they did to us, they did it to Wexford. Like, when they were 3 points down 5 minutes to go, or into injury time, like, you thought, oh, Galway would close this out. But then again, they found a way, and they're just so composed in the last few minutes, and they have that ability just to finish out games.
Yeah, and but why do they have it? Is it because they have a player like TJ Reid, and even Richie Hogan came on and set up one of those scores?
I think you have to look at experience. Like, they have the experienced players, and at the end of the day, in the last few minutes, it was TJ Reid who got that point, and Richie Hogan who gave that ball across to end the Morrissey. Like, I think experience of being in that position over and over again, that helps you when it comes down to the last few minutes. And it's just, I think, belief that obviously you have to give Brian Cody massive credit. Okay, there's a lot of different players in the team, but they still have that same attitude of finishing out games, and I think you have to give Brian Cody massive credit for that.
Where are their physicality levels now compared with a couple of years ago? Because there is that turnover of players, and probably isn't the same 6'4" guys in every position.
Like, they still have some very strong physical players like Walter Walsh and TJ Reid, but I suppose the younger fellas aren't quite at that level yet. Like, they're still brilliant players, and in terms of aggression levels, their work rate is brilliant. I don't think Brian Cody would pick them if they didn't have that. But they just probably don't have that physique yet, which they probably will get in 2 or 3 years.
I think there was a lot of focus on the spine of the Galway team. So obviously Dahi Burke, and he was excellent again. Now Wally Walsh, I thought, did okay at the same time. Centre back Gerard McInerney, who's been much celebrated, I thought he was very quiet, struggled on TJ Reid at times. Davey Burke had spoke of the Kilkenny's fear of Galway coming into it, probably had his quietest game, other than maybe the All-Ireland semi-final against Tip last year. Joe Canning wasn't on fire, and Conor Whelan was eventually taken off, even though he scored a few. Whereas if you look at Kilkenny's spine, Pádraig Walsh went to town, Killian Buckley got man of the match, James Maher should have got man of the match as far as I'm concerned, TJ Reid was great at centre forward. So it ended up that Kilkenny went after the very thing that Galway were supposed to be so good, where they were supposed to be so good.
Yeah, I know, like, killing Buckley and Portcullis, like just right from the start, any ball that went in there, they just dominated every ball. And I think they really set the tone to the rest of the lads. I thought TJ Reid had probably his best game all year so far. And Walter Walsh, I know people are going on about Doughty Burke, how good he was. But I think Walter Walsh still, when it came down to it in the last few minutes, got some critical scores. I think a big thing as well was how they managed, especially in the first half, to quieten Pádraig Mannion. Like, Pádraig Mannion has been a massive player for them, and in my opinion, probably their best player and most consistent player all year. And in that first half, I think when Kenny went top, you saw Pádraig Mannion probably wasn't as influential as he has been. Mm. Then in the second half, he really came into it, and it sort of got Galway ticking and got Galway playing a bit better.
I think there was an element of caveman tactics. I mean, again, we'll come on to the Munster versus Leinster debate later on, but I felt that it was just long ball after long ball after long ball throughout this game. It was a backs game. And like, you know, if you're playing wing back, which you do play, you want static movement. You don't want movement, and you want high ball coming 50-50 so you can attack from behind. Surely that's why the backs were on top.
Yeah, but I think you have to give the forwards massive credit for that. Like the forwards from both sides, from particularly Kilkenny, they put the Galway backs under so much pressure when they were coming out with the ball that they didn't have that extra second to look up and give that perfect pass or give that maybe 60-40 pass. So like the pressure that the Kenny forwards put on Galway, I think, had a massive influence in terms of the ball that went into the Galway forwards.
Okay, well, look, I thought an interesting matchup was TJ Reid against Grode McInerney, and we have a couple of images coming up here. But first of all, you'd imagine that the biggest thing that Micheál Donoghue will be looking at this week, as probably ye did with Pat Gilroy this year, is how do you stop TJ Reid? Ye kept him very quiet, or Owen O'Donnell did, plus he was playing as a spare man back there. If you're the Galway manager, how do you look to keep him quiet this week?
It's very difficult to keep him quiet. For me personally, I think you nearly need to man mark him, because I think one of the points that he got last week is a classic example. And Conor Fogarty just gave him a 2 or 3 yard hand pass, and he just put it straight over the bar. Whereas if you're playing a centre back role and you're marking TJ Reid, like you're obviously in your head you're trying to mind the full back line as well. Mm. But like TJ Reid, they know he's the go-to man. So if he's in any way to space, they just give him the ball. Whereas if it was another person, they probably might take the shot themselves. So I just think like TJ Reid, he has to be followed everywhere, because 9 times out of 10, when he gets the ball, something happens or a score comes from it. Like, so I would probably man mark him.
Have you had to mark him?
I marked him in the league last year, and it's tough. Like he's so physically strong, especially in the air, that that's his biggest strength. But then like his work rate off the ball is unbelievable as well. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. Like when you have the ball, he'd be making 10-15 yards and putting you under pressure, so he was very difficult to mark. Mm.
I think every week when you go out and play a match and you're analysing for the week ahead, you think, what can we improve on last week? And one thing that I noticed from watching TJ Reid against Grode McInerney was the high ball. And I felt that Grode McInerney was getting himself caught on the wrong side a number of times. And what I mean by that, for those who aren't watching the pictures that we're putting on screen, is that if I'm going for a high ball, and I'm not going to be able to hold you off, but if I was going to, I'd want to have you at my left side, your body, and put my hand out to the right where I can catch it uncontested. But we have a couple of images showing that Grode McInerney was getting himself caught on the wrong side, so his arm was in the middle where it can be interfered with as TJ's going up with the ball. How does he adjust that?
I think the big thing is just to make sure you stand on his catching hand. Like the worst thing you can do probably is to get caught underneath it, because you're basically just a sitting duck. TJ is probably just going to put a small bit of pressure on you to stop you from jumping, and he's just going to catch it from behind. So I think you have to be side on or behind, mainly side on, and make sure you're standing on his catching side, because he's so physically strong that if you're on the wrong side, like I know Garo McInerney is probably one of the strongest players in the game, but TJ can just easily hold you off and then catch with the opposite hand. Like.
Mm. And how do you see the replay going? Do you think either team needs to change anything?
I think I was actually just reading something today where Kilkenny have a brilliant record in replays. I think they've won 5 of the last 6, and I can see Colin Fennelly probably coming in maybe full forward and maybe putting Walter Walsh at wing forward. And I just think Kilkenny, like people are saying, oh, Galway have so much to improve on. I think Kilkenny are going to improve massively as well. I still think it'd be very hard to keep those Galway forwards quiet again, like the likes of Conor Whelan, Joe Cannon, Conor Cooney. Like to keep them, 3 of them, quiet in one day is very difficult, and be tough thing to do 2 weeks in a row. So I just think Galway probably still have more firepower and just get scores that bit easier, and I could probably see them just edging it.
Yeah, if they play with a bit more variety in their play, yeah. Like, and you know, mix up the long ball. Because you look at the scorers that they have, like Joe Cadding, Colin Mannion, Connor Whelan, the Coonies, Jason Flynn, Niall Burke to come in, who got 4 points the last day. Whereas Kilkenny, from play in this championship in five games, TJ Reid has got 7 scores, 2-5. Blanchfield has got 2-2. Wally 1-4. After that, they're struggling for scores, yet they're staying in it.
Yeah, like, I think the massive thing is TJ Reid's accuracy from place balls. Like, because he rarely misses or scores 9 out of 10, and Owen Murphy as well. Like, Owen Murphy's, like, against us scored three points, killer blows from about 100 yards. Yeah. And because they're getting those scores, it's very hard, if you're not taking your chances or converted your frees, it's very hard to pull away from them. And we know if Kilkenny are there, thereabouts with 5-10 minutes to go, like, they have the experience to close out the game.
Yeah, and I think, like, with all the simple errors that Galway were making, they were actually dropping simple balls coming from those. I remember one stage, Dahi Burke and possibly Grode McInerney bumped into each other. Yeah. Pádraig Mannion. I just don't think Galway can play as bad again. Yeah. So, I'd be going for Galway as well myself. Yeah. Cork played, obviously won their Munster, retained their Munster title last weekend with a 224-319 win over Clare. Cork boss John Moyler joined Joe Molloy on Off the Ball on Monday evening after the title win, and he spoke about playing with more physicality for the remainder of the championship.
You focus on your strengths and you look at, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of Galway or Kilkenny. You know what those teams are.
Yeah.
So you have to look at that. The minute you know who you're playing, then you really have to tailor your training to meet the requirements of the opposition. Mm. So, you know, the Galway are extremely skillful players. Everyone said they're all big men, but, you know, Joe Canning and Conor Whelan and those, they're super skilled players as well. They're super stick, like TJ Reid, those guys in Kilkenny. You know, they're physical players, they're strong, but they're also extremely skillful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Cork players are probably not as physical, but, you know, we've one or two, Damien, Colin Spillane, Joycey, Bill Cooper, they're extremely physical players. They're extremely strong.
Mm.
With, you know, the skill and speed and a Fitzgibbon, Kingston and those, and, you know, but look, you have to meet the opposition, whatever comes in front of you, and
yeah.
We look forward to that in 4 weeks' time.
Yeah, I'm sure whoever you meet will be a great game. I guess I should have maybe rephrased the question as, do you try and take them on physically? Is that, you know, or do you try and almost go around them? That's kind of the other way of putting it.
I was told myself years ago not to take on a certain player from Kilkenny. Years ago, Frank Cummins, and, you know, he was a giant of a man, and somebody said to me that you should go around him rather than through him, because he'd kill you if you try to go through. He'd kill you. So, you know, you have to think, and you have to be cute, and you have to be smart about the opposition that you're playing and how you're going to beat them.
Did you try go around him, or did you try go through him?
No, I didn't go near him. If Frank caught me in those days, he'd kill you. So, you know, some of these guys, you stay well away, you run around.
Yeah, no doubt.
Chris, I presume you try to physically intimidate players, seeing as you're 6'20" or whatever you are.
Yeah, I was just saying there, like, a very bad record against Cork. Maybe I should be less physical against Cork, because I got two red cards last time we played them. But it's probably just a different style of hurling they play, because they're probably not as physically dominant as other teams or have this physique. They rely a lot on their movement and speed. In terms of their forward line, like, they've probably Seamus Handy and Conal Hannah, probably the two big ball winners.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other lads will be light, fast players. So they just rely a lot on their movement.
Like, people always talk about Dublin's physicality. Do you think sometimes that people are talking down on Dublin hurling when they suggest that they're, you know, manufactured hurlers and don't give you credit for the skill levels?
Yeah, it's probably not a phrase that we like to.
It must piss you off.
Yeah, it does. But I think at the end of the day, like, you're not gonna make it. Look at Galway. I mean, they're not gonna make it if you're just a big physical player. Like, I think there's a hurler in the country who's 6'4", 6'5", that is only there because he's that size. It's hurling at the end of the day, and you're gonna need the skill level. You'll be found out very quickly if your skill levels aren't at the required level.
Mm. Talk to me about Cork then. Do you think that they're an All-Ireland contender now?
Definitely. Like, they're only 2 games away from winning All-Ireland. They have to be All-Ireland contenders. I think the big thing with them, like, when you watch Cork play, generally it's a shootout, isn't it? Like, their forwards are just, they're class forwards who are just so accurate and deadly in front of goals. It'd be interesting if they do play a Kilkenny or Galway, because it's such a contrast in styles, and Kilkenny and Galway are so physical in terms of will they just go make it a shootout, or will they just physically dominate them? But definitely, like, their forwards are so good, and they seem to, their full back line, I think Sean O'Donoghue and Colin Spann have been great for, I know Sean O'Donoghue this year came in and he's been a great find for them, and their defence, they seem to have a bit more of a settled defence, which is excellent because they always have those forwards that are going to score.
Clare were in control in the early part of the game. I think the first half hour they were more or less 8 points ahead. What stood out to me is that they were working, like, they dropped a lot of numbers back, worked the ball upfield and pinned lovely ball in front of John Conlon, and he went to town on Damien Cahalan. Then, second half, I felt that people were very simplistic and just said it was a simple case that Colm Splann went onto Conlon and he controlled him. But what I felt happened is that Cork sat back at the start of the second half. Wind may have been a factor with this, but they started dropping numbers back, which crowded out Conlon and co. And meant that they could then have space at the other end, and they popped ball in front of Patrick Horgan.
Yeah, a big thing, I think, was Christopher Joyce just moved back. He went in centre back and just moved in front of Conlon. And I saw a lot of people saying, "Oh, Clare just stopped hitting ball into John Conlon." I don't think it was a case of that. I think it was a case of Cork's forwards were putting more pressure on the Clare backs coming out, or on the Clare backs or midfield coming out with the ball, so they didn't have that time to pick lovely delivery in. But at the same time, there wasn't that same space that was in front of John Conlon in the first half. Like, there was not much Damien Cahalan could have done in that first half when the ball was played into space in front of John Conlon in the form he's in. And he was so accurate. Every time he touched the ball, it seemed like it was going over the bar. But definitely, I think the Clare's half-back line helped cover the space, and then their forwards just put more pressure on the backs coming out the field, which meant the ball wasn't as good going in.
How much do you have to plan for John Conlon when you're playing against Clare? Like, he's Hurler of the Year, more or less confirmed at this stage. If you were to do it today, he would
be hurling. James Hanley could, I was saying.
Really, So, but how hard is it to stop either of those hurlers?
John Conlon, like, I marked him a few times, and he's just so physically strong as well. Like, balls in the air, like, he's so good at holding you off and then catching it. But he seems to have reinvented himself this year going in full forward, and he's been excellent. And he's just, I think his power and his strike in front of goal has improved, in particular this year. Like you saw in that first half, I don't know, did he have a wide? Like, he just, everything he touched just seemed to go over the bar. But it's just the power. Like, once he gets, I think the only way you can stop him is to stop him getting the ball, because once he gets that ball in his hand, he's such speed and power that it's nearly a goal chance or over the bar straight away.
I saw Paddy Maher tweeting something to the effect that Patrick Horgan is the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Now, he might be exaggerating somewhat, but the point is there, Patrick Horgan, like, good ball going in, I felt, you know, David McInerney, you can say that. Yeah. McInerney was cleaned off, but, like, how do you defend against Patrick Horgan?
David McInerney is one of the best fullbacks in the country, and probably has been the last few years. But, like, Patrick Horgan, I think he's the most consistent player of the last Cork's most consistent player of the last few years. When he gets the ball in the hand and he shoots, like, 9 times out of 10 it's over the bar, and, like, the ball that was going into him was excellent, and he just thrives for a ball like that. Like, and he's unstoppable nearly in that type of form. He's just, like, He probably doesn't take it on as much as other forwards, but his striking over the shoulder is just so accurate and hard to stop.
Yeah, he's beautiful to watch. On the back of that, so that's Munster over. We know Leinster has another weekend to go, so we've decided to pick an all-star team for Munster. Well, I've picked my team. I wouldn't put that on Chris. I think that's a bit harsh. So I'll put my team up on screen, and it's up to you to absolutely slate it. So in goals, Anthony Nash. I think that's kind of a by default. Some of the other goalkeepers had difficult days. Conor Gleeson, cornerback. I think he's been exceptional. David McInerney, Colm Spillane of Cork. I think that I can't really argue with that one. Dermot Burns, Declan Hannan, Brendan Maher, Dara Fitzgibbon, Keane Lynch midfield, Peter Duggan, Seamus Harnedy and Tom Morrissey in the half forward line, and a full forward line of Graham Mulcahy, John Conlon, obviously, and Patrick Horgan, of course. Chris, any complaints there?
I'd probably say Mark Holman's very, very unlucky. I just thought he was brilliant, especially in the Munster final, and it's been very consistent all year, as well as that.
Who are you dropping, though? You got to drop somebody.
It's hard. It's hard looking at that team who you drop, but I just think Mark Coleman has been excellent. For Clare, I think David Reedy and Colm Galvin have been very good. Colm Galvin's been very consistent midfield. Who else? I think Seamus Flanagan, I know probably against Clare, wasn't one of his better games, but I think up to now he's been one of the finds of the season for Limerick. He's been brilliant. So maybe I might have him, but I tell you, him and Mulcahy is probably a toss up.
David Reedy, I think you mentioned as well beforehand.
Yeah, David Reedy, like, he's for a fella who's I don't know what height he is, but he's unbelievable in the air, and he's just an all round hurler. And I think it was definitely a wrong decision him being sent off against Limerick that day, and maybe that's gone against him, but I think he's been brilliant all year.
And he recovered then to score a goal in the Munster final as well, brilliantly taken.
Yeah, it was a great goal, yeah.
Yeah, Dan McCormack, I thought, for Tipperary was quite good as well. Noel and John McGrath at times, Noel McGrath inexplicably dropped for the last game.
Yeah, it's hard not to put one of the McGraths in that team, especially after the performance against Cork that day. That was one of the best performances of the year, really.
And obviously it hurt me not to put in some Tipperary players.
You'd probably have all tip if you could.
If I could. Can't have it every which way. So let's move on to the Munster against Leinster debate. There's no doubt about it. Munster is the best. Now, we did a poll, and we'll get the poll up on screen shortly, but surely you judge a province by its weakest team. And the weakest team in the championship, no doubt, is Offaly. And I know that's a bit harsh to put that on you. But just first of all, we just look at the poll. So I put it up there. A lot of talk at the provincial finals about Munster being wide open hurling with no marking, whereas Leinster is more physical and intense. Which is better? 71% of 629 people said Munster is better, Chris.
I think it comes down to, you can't really answer that question until we see later on in the year if Kilkenny, Galway, Wexford, we'll see who gets the All-Ireland semi-final, who gets the All-Ireland final. I think if Kilkenny or Galway play Clare, Cork, I think you could have two Leinster teams winning those games. So as even though Munster hurling and watched Munster final, it was a brilliant game to watch. I think when it comes down to it, I think Galway and Kilkenny could be there in an All-Ireland final, So,
but there's classic games every week in Munster, whereas other than Dublin against Kilkenny and Kilkenny against Wexford, Leinster was dour.
I don't know about that. It's nearly a different style of hurling. Galway and Kilkenny are so physical, and maybe ourselves as well, where we've big men and we rely a lot on ball winners. Whereas, if you look at the likes of Munster and look at the likes of Clare and Cork, if you have a forward line of Podge Collins and David Reedy, and if Tony Kelly's up there, they don't have the physicality or ball winner, so they just play a different style and different brand of hurling. Which team wins or which brand is more successful, we'll probably see. And I think Galway proved their brand of hurling is the most successful, and Kilkenny have over the last decade. So it's hard to argue that the physicality that the Kilkenny and Galway bring maybe might not look as good to the average person watching, even though I actually love watching the pure physicality and nutritional Leinster final last week. I think the Kilkenny and Galway could be on top.
Yeah, I think we have a couple of images of the Leinster final from last week which prove that it's a bit of a sheep in the heap. Look at that for the throw-in for the second half. 16 players in the space of 20 yards there as well. That's shocking stuff, Chris. Wouldn't want to be involved in any of that. Look at this. That you wouldn't see that in Munster hurling. They'd be too busy throwing the ball over the bar.
They'd just be running away in Munster hurling.
They wouldn't be marking each other.
They wouldn't be marking. In Leinster hurling, you actually have to compete with someone for the ball. I think it is a case of, because it's so, there's so much high ball in the play, maybe route one or maybe stand there 15-on-15, that a lot of times if ball's poked in a half back or half forward, if they win the ball, there's so many bodies around the break or around the person who catches the ball, that there's a lot more rooks formed because of that. Whereas if you're playing the Munster hurling, if you look at Anthony Nash, rarely, unless maybe it's going down on top of Seamus Handley, he's hitting it to a half forward or a midfielder who's on the move. Then when he gets it, he has a bit more space rather than just standing underneath the ball.
Do you think that Galway became the sort of monsters they are now because they were thrown into the Leinster Championship? They knew every year they're going to be playing against Kilkenny, and obviously ye were a very physical team and challenging at the time as well, and ye probably will again. But they were turned into the monsters. They were a product of the environment because that is what Leinster is, whereas previously they mightn't have been that type of team.
Yeah, that could be a case, or else could just be a case of you play the style of hurling that suits the players you have. You look at the Galway players and the forwards are so big and so physical that that's the brand of hurling that suits them. Now, I think you probably need to adapt and have, you can't just have, as we said earlier, you can't just have big men in the forwards or big men all over the pitch. You need to be able to play in different ways, and you can get the ball high low into a lot of these forwards, even though they're 6'4", 6'5", and they can deal with it anyway. But I think it's more of a case dealing with the players you have. The best hurlers in Clare are the likes of Tony Kelly and Colm Galvin and the lads, and they're not 6 foot, but they're the best hurlers. So then you play a certain way to suit them. You're not going to play high ball on top of them all day.
Do you think that the referees tend to let more go in Leinster, whereas in Munster? And Derek Conan said this on Twitter to me as well. He was like that the referees let a lot more go in Munster, whereas in Leinster, let a lot more go in Leinster. So therefore, it turns into physicality. If you're getting away with it, you're going to keep pushing and be physical. Yeah. Whereas in Munster, it's blown up a lot.
I don't know. That's hard to know. Like, I think every referee is different, and maybe referees it's slightly different. And like, it can be a bit frustrating as a player some days when you go out and referees might be told, okay, watch the loose arm this week, or watch steps, or watch maybe that throwing for a hand pass, and that gets blown. So I think it just comes down to the referee more than anything. Like, and if they can let the game go as much as often, I think that's the way to go, really. Like,
just the final word on Munster then. Munster, any team can win Munster, and the best team in Leinster is possibly from Connacht, and the worst team wouldn't win a game in Munster as well. Which is actually
I suppose if you're going through the worst team in Munster, you'd probably go Kerry. So
You might have me there. Yeah. You might have me there. I spoke with Rory O'Connor, who plays with Wexford this weekend. They're back out in the preliminary quarterfinals. But I spoke with him last weekend at the launch of the Bord Gáis Under 21 Championship at the Token Arcade. Rory, first things first, coming from your background, you had a dad who won an All-Ireland, uncle won an All-Ireland as well, John and George. Like, did you grow up just constantly hearing about what great players they are, and that's what you had to live up to?
Yeah, I suppose at my age, going tagging along to the matches, you know, you'd be bumping into fellas that'd be wanting to talk to them, and then you're listening in conversations, and you're hearing, you know, lads talking to them about all these wins. But they're near 60 now, unfortunately. They're getting old, and it's time, unfortunately, to move on, maybe. And hopefully we can, you know, give something for young lads in Wexford to talk about, rather than revert back to 96, because that's it's a long time ago.
And you weren't even born at the time, I presume?
No, I was 98, so I wasn't born at all. The eldest, Jack was 2 years of age, so... yeah, I have no recollection, only looking at all the videos of it and the celebrations and all this. Even looking at it once or twice, you know, give you goosebumps of what it would be like to win one.
And did you hear all the mad stories about the celebrations they had, or was that kept away from you?
They're starting to be released slowly now since I've got older. You know, coming down on the bus and going to each you know, town, starting in Gorey and then down to Enniscorthy, and you know, supporters, you know, pushing the bus and everything like this, and it's just this crazy scenes. I know Wexford would be on lockdown if we did ever win one. So,
what's it like having a brother involved as well? Like, is that add to the routine? You both hop in the car together and go there, or do you go separately?
For the league, I was in college, he was working in Dublin, so we'd come home Friday evening, and Saturday we'd do our own thing, we'd tip around, and then Sunday morning, sure, we're on the same. The mother would have us on the same routine. She'd, you know, breakfast ready, then dinner at dinner time, and then send us off in the car into Wexford Park, or then if we were away again, we'd hit the bus together. So yeah, we're both on the same page, same mentality. So it's handy to have, you know, him there. So we both are on, you know, he'd have us, both of us would have each other ready in that sense. You know.
Talk to me about your first big game last year. It'd have to be that Waterford game in the All-Ireland quarterfinal. What was the lead up to that like? When were you told by Davy Fitz that you were going to be featuring?
Yeah, so I scraped onto the Leinster final panel 26. Didn't get on. He told me that he was thinking of us maybe 5 or 10 minutes, but I think the game was gone out of sight at that stage, so he kept me off. And then we had 2 weeks to train for an All-Ireland quarterfinal, and we had a few A versus B matches, and that's where I kind of took my chance, and I got on well in those. And I was in a little bit of form, and the Thursday before the weekend of the match, he came up to me and he goes, I'm thinking of starting you. And I was like, all right. And he goes, do you think you're up for it? And I goes, I think so. And he goes, right, I'll start you then. So, you know, real, real laid back. And I'm just there, you know, I think it's the biggest thing ever. And he's just so relaxed about it. So, he didn't release the team, which was the sound of him. You know, there wasn't any hype or anything or pressure put on my shoulders. So, we went down then the night before down to Cork. And then, sure, it was just announced then once it was said at the intercom in the match. And you know, once you get out on the pitch, obviously you're nervous, and you know, it was the first big crowd I've ever played. I think there was 40,000 there. And once you're on the pitch, it's just another game of hurling, and you know, embrace. And he told me to enjoy it as much as I could, and I did. So
you were probably the only man to keep it into Jamie Barron last year as well. Did that give you a lot of confidence going forward?
Well, look, it's your midfield. I was centre forward to start and then came up midfield. And midfield is an interesting one. Generally, you can have an outstanding game. You can get on loose ball and you can be very lucky. And another time, sure, I've seen against when Jamie Barron played Kilkenny, sure, he got an amazing goal from running with the ball, you know. So it's kind of the look of the ball, look at the bounce of the ball, where you can pick up maybe a score or two. But yeah, great experience marking top lads. So.
You're being a small bit modest there. But just moving on to this year, you've had a very strong year so far. You've been put on the freeze at times as well. And I just wonder, how do you recover from, like, the Galway game? I mean, from a neutral perspective, it never felt like you were fully in that game or close to winning that game. Against Kilkenny, 9 points up and lose. Like, how do you recover from that?
Yeah, so first with the round robin series, we took it game by game. Never looked ahead of who was ahead of us in the first match. And then once we got over that on this weekend, that Monday, we were focused straight away. We do a bit of analysis on the team we were going to be playing that weekend. And during the weeks, it was all recovery. Maybe 20 minutes training just to get our eye back in or get us all together. But yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a lot of it's down to mentality. When you, like, you don't bounce, like, you have to bounce back from the Galway game, and we did for the first 30 minutes against Kilkenny. I'm not sure the Galway match, we were raring to go, but we were just very flat. Like, Galway scored 1-2 in the first 5 minutes. We clawed it back, and next thing they scored the first 2 or 3 points at the start of the second half. So those little fine margins, you know, if you don't get a good start, you're always going to be trailing. So the Kilkenny game, we're still kicking ourselves. 9 points up in the first half, we were hurling over skin, and then the second half, it just seemed to, you know, we kind of went away from our game plan a little bit and went straight down the middle and rather than playing the wings. And in the second half, they had got about 7 points. Next thing, there's only about 10 minutes left. You know, the game slipped from us. So we're certainly going to learn from it. If we can piece two halves together like we did in the first half, in shorters, we're going to be, you know, put it up to whoever we meet now next in the championship.
Will you be watching the Joe McDonagh final this weekend just to scope out the opposition?
I'm not sure. We're training Sunday morning. If it's not televised, I'll watch it, but I'm not sure if we'll be let go have a look. And I'm sure Dave will leave that to him. You know, he'll have a sight for it. So.
So that's Carolyn Westmead. Also that day is Galway and Kilkenny in the Leinster final. Is there any similarities between the two teams, any differences, and how do you see this game going?
Well, obviously Galway are down the line now a couple of years. You know, it was a 2012, they won their first Leinster final against Kilkenny, and that was more or less the same team. Three lads maybe gone off and three new lads after coming in. So it's 4 years on and now they've won their first All-Ireland, and now they're really trying to mirror maybe the Kilkenny team, the great Kilkenny team that's won in the last couple of years. But Kilkenny are kind of similar to ourselves. We're coming, a lot of young lads coming in. So, but you know, I wouldn't write Kilkenny off. I think a lot of people are. I think they'll give Galway a right old battle, and you never know, it could actually go their way.
I presume hurling dominates most of your life in between college or whatever. What do you do with your spare time other than hurling?
Spare time other than hurling, Jesus.
Playing video games here?
Yeah, playing video games. Sure, I'm working at the moment, Monday to Friday, so weekends generally it's like training, and then if you're not training with this heat, you're relaxing on the couch. But chilling, you know, beach now, sure, down Wexford and Rosslare, in this heat is deadly. But at the moment, the summer, if you're in the middle of the championship, it's either you're hurling or you're relaxing, you know, you're recovering.
Best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thanks very much, Shane. Cheers.
Yeah, Chris, you'd imagine that Wexford are going to beat Westmead this weekend.
Yeah, I do expect Wexford to come through, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. Cusick Park's a very tough place to go. I don't know the dimensions of the pitch now, but it just seems like it's really, really small and tight. Maybe it's because the crowd are so close to the pitch, and probably would be a massive Westmead crowd there. I just think it's going to be hard for Westmead, nearly the mental aspect of losing. There's obviously going to be a big disappointment there from last weekend, and it's only a week turnaround. Mm. Whereas Wexford, okay, they're very disappointed against Kilkenny, but they had that 3-4 week break to maybe take a few days off and then come back and really go at it again. But like Westmead, they have some brilliant players. Like, I played Railway Cup with Tommy Doyle and Angus Clark. They were both my age, and they're both brilliant hurlers. And Owen Price, I think he scored 5 or 6 points. Like, he's a class hurler that those lads would make nearly any team in the country.
I think last weekend, Derek McNicholas, I was at their game against the Joe McDonagh final, which Carlow won. Like, Westmead had won 4 weeks in a row, and then now they've lost to Carlow twice in a row, so confidence might be a little bit hit. But there was one score at one stage from, I think it was Derek McNicholas.
On the sideline, I saw that, yeah.
So it was funny, he was solo and long, he was about to strike, one of the Carlow players, Hurley's, had fallen out of his hand and it ended up hooking McNicholas as he was striking, even though it wasn't been held by anyone. He got it over Ruck and threw it over from the 65 in the sideline. Unbelievable as well. So Rory O'Connor was playing during the week as well for the under-21s against Galway. Massive disappointment as well. But he'd be up there among some of the better players in the country, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. Like, I don't know, I think he's only 19, 20, but like his performances this year have been like a player who's been playing in County Hurling for the last 10 years, like against us. He really came into it in the last 5 minutes when Wexford needed him, and he's definitely a massive leader for them already at such a young age. And it's only better he's getting, so... Like he's definitely up there as one of the best hurlers in the country at the moment.
Mm. Do you see Wexford as an All-Ireland contender this year? I mean, the next game would be Clare, assuming they win this weekend.
Yeah, assuming they win this weekend. Like, I think Clare, the Davy Fitz factor, like, he's going to know an awful lot about Clare and maybe how to counteract their hurling. So like, I actually think Wexford will beat Clare and they'll come through that. And then it's a semi-final against possibly maybe Cork, or I don't know how it works out, but against Cork. Then you're in Croke Park. I think Croke Park will suit Wexford. And like if Lee Chin and Conor McDonald, if they perform with Rory O'Connor, like it's a very good forward line, and I think they still could have a say in the championship. Yeah.
Now, we did plan to have a Joe McDonough 15 done out for today, but our guest, he was ill, unfortunately. We couldn't do it. We'll hope to do it again maybe next week when we do the Leinster All-Star team as well. The other preliminary quarter-final this weekend is Carlow against Limerick. I thought it was interesting watching Carlow last weekend. They had James Doyle and Chris Nolan isolated inside, and they looked quite dangerous up there. What's your thoughts on this game? I suppose like Limerick can't be as bad as they were against Clare when they lost by 11 points.
Yeah, I think Limerick were just really flat that day. Like they've probably been the most consistent team nearly all year. Like they've been brilliant, and we played them in 1B and they were flying it. They were excellent in the first three games in the championship. I just think that was just an off day, and it's
the third week in a row thing.
Yeah, I don't know about the third week in a row. I don't read too much into that. I think that there's a lot made about that, and when probably it shouldn't be. It's nearly just the mental aspect, like more so than physical. Mm. Like if you play a match on a Sunday and you have a week break. Like it's not really till maybe the Wednesday or the Thursday that you're thinking about the next game. You're sort of, especially if you lose, you're sort of dwelling on what I should have done in the game beforehand. But I think the break now, the 3-4 weeks that Limerick and Wexford have had off, is really going to stand to them. Like, especially coming into the, if they do get through these two games coming into the quarterfinal. But Carlow have had a brilliant year, like they're getting promoted from into 1B and winning the Christy Ring. So they're going to be full of confidence as well.
Yeah. So, and they're the inaugural Joe McDonough winners. Do you think that like Kildare won the Christy Ring and then a week later they're out in that promotion relegation against Antrim as well? Really harsh. Do you think it's harsh on Carlow that they don't get a bit of time to savour that victory?
Yeah, I don't think that's fair or right at all. Like, I think they definitely should have, especially the team that they're playing in the next game. When they have a 3 or 4 week break and then to go a week later, it's tough now. If Limerick and Wexford had played last week as well and they both at the same time, then you can understand it. But like, I think a 2 week break minimum should have been afforded to Carlow and Westmead.
Mm. Were you on that Dublin team that lost to Carlow at under 21 level a few years ago?
I was, unfortunately. Yeah, there was.
How did you go?
not great. And like even this year, I was down at the 21s against Carlow. Now I think Dublin won well, but they've some brilliant players like that, like Chris Nolan, who was excellent that day, and he's a very good hurler.
Yeah, and do you like the idea that Offaly are going down directly into the Joe McDonagh and Carlow going up, or what would you like to see as the setup?
To be honest, I think, like, I don't know what Carlow or Westmeath or the winners of John McDonagh agree, but I think Offaly, because they finished last, like maybe they should be afforded maybe a playoff against the winners of the John McDonagh. If Carlow or Westmeath are good enough to play in the Leinster Championship, maybe they should have to play Offaly and give a chance. But then I don't know, is that fair on maybe the winners of the John McDonagh as well? Like, so it is a tough one.
So Limerick, do you think that they're different from last year? Are they a different animal? Like, I do think that every team this year has probably not been at their best in at least one game. Maybe that Clare game was an aberration. Are they different from last year?
Definitely, yeah. I think the second year under John Coyley, like they improved so much, and like the way they played in the league, in nearly every game, they really show consistency that they hadn't had. And I think they just have more of a settled team, and they found the new players. And say those lads that were on those All-Ireland under-21 teams, they're just a bit older and a bit more experienced at this level. And yeah, they seem to have a very settled team. And like they probably have maybe a bit of an advantage if they can get through this weekend of playing the losers of Galway Kilkenny, because that's going to be obviously a major disappointment for Galway and Kilkenny, and that's only a week break. And we, as we said, like the mental, they'll be very disappointed, and then they only have, they've turned that around in such a short space of time. So Limerick might have an edge in, against one of those teams in the quarterfinal.
Mm. Now we've got a video coming up with Tommy Walsh and Brendan Maher just talking about a few different topics in hurling at the moment. But just Chris, before we say goodbye to you, who do you see winning the All-Ireland this year?
I think it's hard to look past Galway, to be honest with you. I know that's probably the easy option, but like if you, in terms of players and experience, like to have the to have win the All Ireland last year off their back, so I think they're going to be very tough to beat.
Even after Kilkenny showing that they're human last weekend.
Yeah, I think that could be the wake up call they needed, and I think they will perform a lot better this weekend. And if they get through that, they're into an All Ireland semi final in Croke Park, and they'll be very, very dangerous then.
Actually, there's one other topic before we go as well. Were you monitoring Donegal, looking into the situation whereby they'd have to play Dublin in the football and yeah. at the neutral venue, which is going to be Croke Park?
Yeah.
Last year, you had to play, was it a quarter-final against Tipperary?
Yeah.
Supposed to be at a neutral venue, ended yeah. up being in Thurles. How much of a massive disadvantage is that?
I think if you look at the results maybe from this year in the round-robin system and home teams and how many wins came from a home team, like there's no doubt that a home advantage is huge. I'd say just a slight difference. It is, it's not much of a difference, but like Tipperary playing in Thurles is definitely their home venue because they probably train there and they'd be a lot used to it. Now Dublin footballers, like Croke Park, they don't train there. I know they play all the majority of games there, but like home advantage is massive. And I suppose we weren't probably too happy when it was played in Thurles last year, but. Yeah, like just that's the way it is, isn't it?
So maybe you can go on strike next year.
Nah, I don't with that.
All right, here's a video with Tommy and Brendan. Tommy, the New Bridge or Nowhere thing in the past week or so, do you think that's going to kickstart a revolution in the GAA?
Yeah, well, I was away for it, so I missed it. And it was only when I came back on the Friday, I seen what was after happening. And I was absolutely delighted because I even felt this year Waterford could have done that. Like, I couldn't understand why Waterford couldn't play their matches in Welsh Park. They're able to hold big league games. And, you know, even with 5,000-6,000, because the whole thing is promoting hurling. And how do you promote hurling is packed crowds and maybe winning matches. And, like, the scenes that we seen in Newbridge last night, like, say, even if they had to win that game in Croke Park, like, it would have been brilliant and all that. But there's no way it would have matched what happened. Like, the GAA, like, if we remember what it's about, like, it's about community, it's about spirit, it's about lads' emotions and feelings. Like, we've seen that in Newbridge the other night, where the scenes after the match, the crowd were on the field, they were hugging players, supporters hugging supporters, coming up to the cameras. Like, I think the memories that them Kildare people, not just the players, but the young people, the old people, that they will have got out of that, will no matter what happens for the rest of the year, they will have that for the rest of their lives. And I think that's where we as GAA people need to push that more. And fair play to the Kildare supporters, the Kildare players, the Kildare management, for going back and saying, listen lads, we're not going to Croke Park. This is more than just about getting everyone in to watch the match. This is about us after training for our lives. These young players, they're after training with their clubs, training with under-21s, training with their seniors for their whole lives to win matches. Not to create big crowds or to make more revenue, I suppose, for the board. And I thought that was the biggest impact, and it's going to have a massive impact. And I would be very, very surprised if Waterford don't demand their home games next year to be played in Welsh Park in front of 4,000 or 5,000 people, whatever it takes. And it goes back then to what the GAA, like, at the moment, the club scene is, I can only speak for ourselves, like, it's been the toughest year ever. I've been back with the club since, say, 15. 15, 16, 17 were three great years. We had club matches the whole time. It was just brilliant all year round. This year, you're playing matches. Next minute, it's called off because another team mightn't be able to field players because you just don't know, you know, there's so little going on. And I think we need to get back. At the moment, the way I see it is the county is kind of, is where it's all at. Like, it's kind of 80, 90% county, 10, 20% clubs. The GAA is about 50-50, like. I'm a club man, but I was also a county man for many years, so I can see both sides of it. We need to get back to the place where, and we need to push it, everybody, county boards, players, and Croke Park and the GAA, where it's a 50-50 thing, where the club and the county, and whatever they have to do, let's go do it. Because we've seen Padraig Duffy in Dubai. Like, they're massive clubmen as well. I know he's gone and the lads that are after replacing him, they're massive clubmen. I know, because I've been asking about them, and they've done massive things for their club. So let's all get together and make sure that we are the GA. Like, I was away there last week, and the one thing I was thinking at home was, like, this is what we have, is the community, that everyone is together. Anyone that was ever away on holidays, like, you're kind of your own man there, and there's no really togetherness, no one really knows anyone. And I think it would be massive, it's going to be have massive implications in a good way for the GA, what happened in Newbridge last week.
Brendan, you played against Waterford in Limerick. Did it feel strange? Would you rather see that, like, back in Waterford in a smaller venue? And also, just like, you know, you're a big club man as well. Do you think, like what Tommy's saying, that there's an imbalance there? You know, you got the first county final with Burslea last year as well. Brilliant occasion. Obviously, the result wasn't the right one. But just those two topics, like, what are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, I think, I suppose the Waterford game this year was a little bit strange. You know, it was the whole home and away thing, but it didn't feel like an away game. And I'm sure it didn't feel like a home game for Waterford. So it was a little bit strange, I think, for both teams. And, you know, like what we saw last night in Newbridge, the uncertainty that was there during the week, I suppose, of is it going to be on in Croke Park, is it going to be on in Newbridge? Imagine if that build-up was from last Monday, all the people of Kildare looking forward to a home game, the buzz that would have been around. Like, and that's what it's about, whether you're a player or a supporter, it's all about those experiences and the memories you have then from that experience. So, you know, last night I think will be etched in the memory of supporters and players forever. And I think that's what we need to be looking at. We need to be creating those memories. And, you know, like, Waterford deserved that as well, you know, and whatever has to happen, I suppose, for Walsh Power to be in that, you know, to health and safety reasons, whatever the reasons are, I think they should be entitled to play their home games. And, you know, as a player, you know, we spoke earlier about going down to Nolan Power to play games and the atmosphere that it's created. It's not about, you know, that there was only 20,000 there. It felt like there was 100,000 there. It's the atmosphere, and it's the occasion, and it's the memories you have, you know. And I suppose then moving on to the club scene, you know, I'm still a current player, like county player, but, you know, you're a club man first of all, and, you know, you always, you know what's going on, whether you're training with the county or training with the club, you know what's going on in the club. And this year has been very frustrating, I think, as a club player. In Tipperary, we're out of the championship, but we're still not going to be playing club games until August, or maybe even late August, with the 21s now making the semi-final. So it's very, very frustrating with the weather we're having now, and the next few weeks, July, there's going to be no championship games, you know, and it could be towards the end of August before you have a championship game. Like, that's just that's a shame, like, for that to happen. So hopefully the team can be tweaked a little bit and we can get it right and get that balance right, I think, between club and county.
Yeah, even in Dublin, like, we played two games in April and then it's 4.5 months, it's late September before we get going for the third group game. So it's feels like a bit of a joke. Are there any for the referees this year, you think that that's a bit of an issue in the GAA at the moment? Can you explain why?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, there's been a lot of people maybe having different opinions on officials and referees this year, and I think it's very harsh because they're being put under a lot of pressure. And, you know, the inter-county games, you know, there's huge pressure on everyone, and obviously, you know, referees are going out, they're not going out to be, they don't want to be the talk of, you know, a controversial decision. Like, they want to go out and they want to do the best that they can be, just like players. And I think that, you know, with all the changes in rules and with all this talk of different things in hurling, I suppose it's a lot about face guard and head and all of this, and I just think the referees are being put under so much pressure to not miss something that, you know, they're making decisions then and they're probably doubting themselves, like, I could get in a bit of heat for this, or, you know, I just think that maybe there needs to be a little bit of a pullback and try and trust the person that's in there and give them the confidence, just like you would in a player, like, give them the confidence to go out and make those decisions and not be putting them under so much pressure.
What do you think of that, Tommy, as well? Obviously, I'd say in the background, you're possibly thinking of that, you know, there's been helmet pulls and then there was the Jason Ford ghost goal as well and the focus on the umpire. Where are you at with this situation?
Yeah, well, I'd like if the referees, see, it's so hard for referees now with cameras. There's so many different cameras going around the grounds that everyone has been highlighted that night. But a referee can't see all them angles at slow motion and that. So how is he supposed to pick up that when he's trying to watch absolutely everyone? So I think there should be more maybe talks and that with players and that, just to see, like, right, this is what we're pulling up on, right? But, like, two instances that really I felt they kind of hurt me as regards the players. Mickey Cahill sending off and last year Damien Cahalan's. What they were was, like, hurling is such a fast game, right? So you commit to a tackle. So them two boys committed to two tackles, right? And it was just a speed. One little sidestep one way then, and suddenly it looks terrible. And it, like, it's not soccer. It's not Gaelic football. Like, this is a different game. And to be put to the line for something like that, like, where it just doesn't make sense to me, because if you're a full-blooded player and you're committed, there are kind of mistakes that you're going to make. And listen, if it's kind of where you're trying to make an advantage for your team or take down a lad, cynical play, fair enough, they're yellow cards. Yeah, I don't mind that. But for mistakes like that, I just think it's too fast a game to be sending off lads for that. Like, we're trying to compare ourselves to soccer, maybe, or trying to get, you know, decisions right like that. But for instances like that, mistakes, I think we have to give the referees the benefit of the doubt to be that bit more lenient. That for sending, we can't just send off lads because, right, it was a high tackle or it was this or it was that because it's in a notebook. We need to, I think, have that bit more leniency to be able to say, listen, hold on a minute now. I know he took your man down, but it was a mistake where your man sidestepped him and he just tripped over his leg. And things like that, I think, if we could be that bit more lenient. And remember for the referees that they've only two eyes. They can only look in one place at the one time, so.
You seem to be nodding there the whole time. You're agreeing?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I think, I suppose, maybe to talk about Mickey Cahill's instance, like, DJ Forn, I think, was the player. He didn't go to the ground. No. He brushed straight past him, had the shot on goal. I'd say he didn't even expect it to be a free, you know. And I suppose maybe by the rule book, it was technically a yellow card. And that's the difference. And that's what I think with referees are being put under pressure. If it's a foul by the rules, they have to give the card. Whereas, you know, they should be encouraged maybe to use their own judgment a little bit more. And you know, to have the freedom to do that. Like, and I think maybe they feel under pressure. Like, if I don't give the yellow card here now, am I going to get a bit heat over it from the powers that be, you know? So I think it's just a little bit more leniency and a little bit more encouragement to referees to make the calls that they think are right. And they will get calls wrong, you know, but I don't think they should be put under pressure to be dishing out cards just because of a rule. You know, it should be, as Tommy said, the game is so quick. Things can happen, and by the rule book, it could be a foul. But in the context of it, it's not a foul, or it's not, you know, it's not cynical. And I think, you know, that's the balance that we need to try and find.
Just this year, I mean, 4 games in 4 weeks for Tipperary. Is it very difficult, like what are the tactical innovations you're seeing this year? And in the space of 4 games in 4 weeks, what's the biggest thing? Is it being able to be flexible from game to game and the different game plans you're going to come up against?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I suppose with the amount of analysis that goes into games now, this year was a challenge because you only had a week between each game. So, like, we weren't able to look at the second, third and fourth game. You were only able to concentrate on one game at a time. So I actually kind of enjoyed it because you didn't have that whole build-up and tactical talk, you know. It was just, you know, the Monday morning, right, have a game to look forward to next Sunday again. And there was a little bit of talk about, you know, what the opposition are going to do. But from your own point of view then, it's trying to actually have variety in your game. Because obviously teams will set up a certain way, or they'll put lads on different lads to try and impose themselves on you. And, you know, you need to have a couple of things you're able to do. You need to be able to go long. You need to be able to play the ball short. You know, you need to be able to move lads around. And if you're one dimensional, like, it's very easy for an opposing team to set up against you and to stop that, you know.
And is it possible that that's what caught Tipperary out, or was it something different?
Yeah, I think it was probably a mixture of a number of things, I suppose. We struggled with injuries. A lot of our experienced players were only coming back from injuries, and to play 4 games then in 3 weeks was obviously a tough task. I think we did go along, I suppose, a little bit too much. We didn't vary the play enough. And obviously after the first defeat against Limerick, confidence was shot. It was very hard to pick it up that quick. You know, it was such a sharp period of time. It was 21 days, in four games in 21 days. So I think we struggled. You know, I think it was a number of factors, I suppose. But overall, it was just disappointing performances.
And do you think that playing so many games in a short period of time might have contributed to the fact that you did your cruciate? Or was that just Podge Collins did a quick turn and you were just unlucky?
Yeah, I think it was just unlucky. I don't think anything with tiredness or anything had to do with it. It wasn't muscle related. It was actually just, I tried to turn away that I shouldn't have. And just, you know, when you're running at full speed, it's always a danger, like, when you're twisting and turning, that your knees can go. And it was just one of those things. I've been lucky, thankfully. This is my first major injury, like, so it is what it is. But it wasn't anything to do with tiredness or games, the amount of games or anything like that.
Just one final question, Tommy. Like, for yourself, the tactical innovations, anything you're seeing this year?
Yeah, I think it's after, you know, we had teams that were predominantly short game. Then we had, like, the Kilkenny, Tipperary's, Galway's were long game. I think it's after moving on now where you just, as Brendan said, you have to be unpredictable. You have to vary the play because there's so much analysis going on that if you play in one particular play, guys are going to look at videos, you know, all week long, and it's gone so professional now. They will have guys to do that, and they'll say, right, this is the way this team play, so let's watch it, and then you have them nullified. So I think you just have to be unpredictable, and I seen that myself in my last year or two playing hurling, where it was all about heads up hurling, where you had to train the team to think on their feet, that you don't just go around like, well, for 12 years I just got the ball and drove it as far as I could. So you wouldn't get away with that anymore, so you have to be able to do both. So I think that's where it's gone, and it is difficult, it's very difficult to do, and I think that's just the way you have to be able to. I think we see it with Clare this year, like they were so short, puck outs were short, every like, and they're passing around the ball in their back line, and like you're in the opposing team's danger area where they can score if it breaks down. And we know hurling, even if you have the best skill in the world, is all it takes is a lad to come in with a hurl and put you off, and the ball is gone, and next minute they score a goal or a point. So I think we see it with Clare this year, they're hitting the ball that bit more longer, and they're you know, they're varying it now, in fairness, and have big guys up there to win it, and I think it's proven they're winning tight matches, you know, maybe matches they shouldn't be winning.
Alright lads, thanks.
Okay, thanks Shane.
So that's the thoughts of Tommy Walsh and Brendan Maher. I'm joined now by Leon Blanche of Boyle Sports now. How are you doing, Leon?
I'm doing very well, Shane. Looking forward to four qualifiers before we get to the Super 8s, but we've got an extra added dish, and the main dish is the replay between Kilkenny and, of course, Galway.
Yeah, we thought it was just preliminary quarterfinals in the hurling this weekend, Carlow, Limerick, Westmeath and Wexford, but there's a great bet for the for new customers in Boyle Sports this weekend.
Yeah, we're going all out on this replay, exclusively for Off the Ball. offtheball.com/Boyle Sports for new customers. We're giving 50-1 Galway to beat Kilkenny. Only for new customers. You can only get it on offtheball.com/Boyle Sports. So look, if you like Galway, if you fancy their chances, if you're from Galway, you should be availing it at 50-1.
It's a decent price anyway, and definitely you'd be tempted to have a nippy sweetie on that.
Yeah, you would. Look, when you look at Galway's price, they're 4-9. I think that's the exact same price they were last Sunday.
Yeah.
But you and I were just chatting. I think Galway, they won't play as bad.
They'll struggle to. Because they never got flowing at all. And
not really. And yet they were still ahead going into the last couple of minutes. Mm. And I think that's a sign of a good side. Playing average and still being ahead. And I think Galway might just be a blessing in disguise. Everybody was hyping them up as, yes, they'll win back-to-back All-Irelands. Yes, they're the best team in the country. Yes, they'll beat Kilkenny. I felt it too. I thought they would have covered the spread, which again is 3 points. Galway -3 at evens. Kilkenny +3 at 10-11. But I think the venue, I think the week, in reflection of how bad they played last Sunday at HQ at Croke Park, I think it all points to a Galway victory.
What's the over-under here? Because last week there was only 36... the overall scoring, because last week there was only 36 points.
Yeah, I mean, it's 46.5 this week.
Seems a bit high.
It does to me as well. I think you'd have to be going under at 10-11. Mm. Even if they were to knock on an extra 5, 6, 7 points from last week, you'd still be under 46.5. So I'm going to go the under 46.5. I think Kilkenny will want to start strong. They'll want to put a little seed of doubt in Galway's mind, but I just look at Galway. I think, as I said, this could be a wake-up call. They'll go to a neutral venue down in Munster to play the Leinster final, but I think it'll suit Galway. Should be a good crowd. I fully expect Galway to win at 4-9, but I think they'll even be better, and I think -3 at even money. And I'm looking at the likes of, like, you're looking at who's going to score the first goal. So the players that are leading the betting, Cooney and TJ, are level at 6-1. Connor Whelan at 7-1. My old friend Joe Canning, I'm just looking at him and wondering, will he get more involved further up the field?
Right.
Okay. I don't know. Will he or won't he?
Well, he's probably going to stay at centre forward as well, just because they want a bit more pace, or maybe ball winner inside.
Yeah.
And so he might float from centre forward. So yeah, he might.
Last week he had that chance, didn't he, Shane, when he tried to pass it.
He tried to force it, yeah.
I think he should go himself.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick a few above myself. I think 8-1, 15-2 for Canning for first goal. It's not bad. And of course, if a goal gets scored inside the first 10 minutes, we'll be doubling all the odds. So we're giving away a lot this weekend, but the 50-1 Galway to beat Kilkenny for new customers, offtheball.com/Boyle Sports.
That is big. Roscommon against Armagh is the first of the football matches on this weekend. 4-9 Roscommon, 9-1 for the draw, 12-5 for Armagh. What are you fancying here?
And you know something, Armagh last week I thought they were dead and buried. I thought against Clare, who are an up and coming side, They barely missed out on promotion from Division 2. And I thought, just looking at Armagh, they hung in there. They showed a bit of grit. They showed a bit of determination. They've been playing week on week, whereas Common haven't played now since getting beaten by Galway. And will Armagh beat Roscommon? I don't know, but I'm going to take Armagh plus 3 points.
I think that's a decent bet.
I'm going to take Armagh plus 3 at 10 to 11. I just feel they're coming in with a lot of confidence. The geezer, he doesn't get an awful lot of credit for the job he's doing up at Armagh, but I think he's doing very well for what he has at his disposal. And I think Armagh will put it up to the Rossies. Don't know whether they can get over the line, Shane, but I think plus 3 at 10 to 11, that's where I'd be going in the first of the qualifiers we're talking about.
Tyrone against Cork. I mean, Tyrone have played many games back to back in the last several weeks now, but can they beat Cork? Cork were pathetic, really, in the Munster final against Kerry.
Yeah,
can they pick it up?
Well, they were bad. Tyrone are 3-1 on favourites. Short enough, I thought Cavan missed the beat last week. I thought that 10 minutes just before half time, when they tried to go ultra defensive and Tyrone were able to pick them out. When Cavan attacked them in the second half, they exposed the weaknesses of the Tyrone defence. It's not very strong. Now, Cork, as you rightly say, they're 16-5 to win the game. They've got to show a lot more than what they showed in the Munster final. They're only getting 3 points at 11-10. It's not a lot. When you look at Roscommon at 4-9, Armagh getting 3 points. When you look at Tyrone at 1-3, Cork are only getting 3. I'd be looking at Cork plus 4 or plus 5 if I was thinking they could get under the spread. I think Tyrone will get into the Super 8s. And of course, that means they'll be in with Donegal and Dublin,
which would make for a great Super 8 pool. Kildare against Fermanagh. Kildare last week delivered out of nowhere.
Yeah.
We wondered after the Newbridge or nowhere, could they back it up? And they did, and they knocked out Mayo. So are they going to keep it going against Fermanagh?
Well, I think, Shane, there was no fluke in last Saturday night. They really rose to the occasion. All the talk in the media was about the venue during the week. But to be fair, the manager and his players, they really put it together. Now, they're coming in as clear favourites at 4-11 against a Fermanagh side who were dismantled, really, in the Ulster final. I was expecting a bit more from Fermanagh. I thought they would have been able to keep it tight against Donegal, but Donegal exposed serious weaknesses in that Fermanagh team. Now, Kildare are not at the same standard as Donegal. I think we'll agree with that. Even though they beat Mayo, it was a huge day for Kildare. But their favourite, 4-11, they're up against a Fermanagh team that, again, is similar to Cork, need to pick themselves up, need to show something. Like, you must remember, this is a chance to get into the Super 8s. So it's a massive, massive game. I think Kildare will win. Will they cover minus 3 at evens? It's a very...
If they play like they did last week, they can.
I think so too. Yeah. And I think that could be the springboard for Kildare football.
Mm.
They need this. Kildare football needs a team that has something to show their fans. And I think Kildare minus 3. I'm going to stick with the Lily Whites. Minus 3 at evens.
And then the final game as well, Monaghan against Laois. Surely it's got to be Monaghan here.
Yeah, you'd fancy Monaghan. They're a shortest price favourite out of all the qualifiers in terms of being 6-1 on. McManus has been well supported at 5-1 to score the first goal. However, I was at Croke Park and I watched the first half intensely to see how much Laois put into it. And they put absolutely everything into it against Dublin. You can say the Dubs weren't great, or you can give Laois a bit of credit and say that they performed really well. Now, they're getting a 6-point head start against Monaghan.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. And I think Laois plus 6. I'm not saying Laois will beat Monaghan. I think Monaghan will go through. But I think plus 6 at 5-6 is where I'm going to go in the last qualifier. I think Laois are good enough with a 6-point head start of coming under the spread. I fully fancy Monaghan to go through. Kildare will go through. I think Tyrone will just scrape by. And I think Roscommon will also scrape by.
Thanks for that, Leon. And don't worry, you can go and get more prices at offtheball.com/boilsports. We're going to have reporters all around the grounds throughout the weekend. We've Anthony Moyles and David McIntyre at Armagh against Roscommon and Cork against Tyrone. We've Maura Trasini-Kellig at Kildare versus Fermanagh. And then on Sunday at Galway Kilkenny, we have Tommy Walsh, and at Laois Monaghan, we have Oisín Langan as well. So that's all from the Hurling Show next week. Whether you're getting us on YouTube, YouTube, Twitter, Periscope, wherever it is, we'll see you again next week.
GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.